Okay, welcome everyone. Good evening. Let's just summarize some of the points that we've made before we go on. We have a parasha of Edom Zomimim. The second pair of Edom accused the first pair of Edom of perjuring themselves, and in a very specific way. What did they say to the first pair of Edom? Imano Ayisim. You couldn't have been there at that time in that place because you were with us elsewhere at that time in that place. And the Torah says, "V'asisim lo kasher zomam lasos liochov." The Torah also says, "V'hine eid sheker ha'eid." So the two things that happen now as a result of Azom. The first thing is that we establish that the first pair of Edom lied. The second thing that happens is the first pair of Edom become punished. Now, within the context of kasher zomam, of punishing the Edom, we have three different categories that we discussed. Category number one is what I call the literal category, meaning we fulfill the law of kasher zomam to the T. Two Edom testify that Reuven killed Shimon, and therefore Reuven should be killed as a rotzeach. After Hazom of the Edom will be killed as a rotzeach. Two Edom testify against Reuven that he ate chazir, and therefore he has to get malchus. Now they were huzam, now these two Edom will get malchus. Two pair of Edom testify that Reuven owes Shimon $1,000. After Hazom, they will pay Reuven $1,000. Fine. That's the literal application of kasher zomam. Then we have a middle ground kasher zomam. And that's the case of Edei Nara Hamurasa Bas Kohen Shezinso. In other words, since she's a Bas Kohen, if she's after Erisin, which means as far as Halakha is concerned for capital punishment in the case of adultery, she will be, and so will the Boel, be put to death under capital punishment. But there's a difference between the Boel and the Nivellus, if you recall. The Boel gets Chedek, the Nivellus gets Sreifa. She's the Bas Kohen, and therefore she gets a more severe punishment. Now the Edom testified on both the Boel and the Nivellus, and therefore they wanted to incur on the Boel a lesser capital punishment. Again, all the capital punishments fits into a hierarchy, and that is chenek. For the Boel Nivelles, they wanted to impose a more severe punishment, Sreifa. So what do we do with the Edom? Technically, we should give them the worst of all punishments. But the Gemara says no. In this case, we're not going to be Mekayim Kasher Zomam literally. We'll have a partial Kiyum of Kasher, meaning in terms of their intention vis-a-vis the Boel, for Chenek, we will fulfill and implement the law of Kasher Zomam, but not as far as the Nivellus is concerned, is not as far as Sreifa. Now our Mishnah presents the most extreme category, the other polar extreme, where Ein Bo Kiyum Kasher Zomam Kolika. There's no way that we can implement Kasher Zomam. The whole deal of kasher zomam goes overboard. And that is in two different cases. The Mishnah records, first of all, the case of chalolus, meaning psul kuna, and secondly, the case of golus. So the first case of chalolus, the Edom testified that on such a place, at such a place, such a time, we saw this woman, the mother of this child, receive a get. And then this woman marries a kohen. We thought that the child should be a kosher lakuhuna. No, he's pasul lakuhuna by virtue of these Edom. Now the Edom become Edom Zomim. You couldn't have seen the get at such a time, at such a place, because you were with us elsewhere. Imanu Ayisem. Now what do we do? Well, the first logical possibility is let's make the Edom into a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. Let's disqualify them for kuhuna. Hold on a second, are they kohen? Rashi says they're kohen. But the Meiri quotes the Eish Mefarshim that even if they're not Kohanim, there's still a din that would impose upon these Edom a kind of, we'll call it a quasi-psul chalolus, and that would be that they passel their wife through bia. Rashi says, let's go the simple way, let's take the high road, and these Edom Zomim themselves are Kohanim. If we implement kasher zomam literally, then they become chalolim, they become psulikum. Why don't we do this? So the Gemara is going to have a whole sophisticated drasha, and we're going to get into that tonight with the Afike Yam. By the way, I have extra copies here of the Afike Yam if anyone doesn't have a copy. And this is the third category where there's no kasherism. The Mishnah has a second case where two Edom testify that Reuven killed Shimon unintentionally, and therefore Reuven should be subject to what punishment? Golus. Again, I want you to think about that case. We're going to get into this later on. Is it they're just testifying on an act of murder? Or they're testifying in a chiyuv goes? Well, what exactly is the nature of their testimony? Fine. Well, whatever it is, we cannot implement for some unknown reason the punishment of Kashrus Zalman literally and send these Eidim into the Yer Mikla. We can't do that. Now the Mishnah asks another question. Well, what happens in this most extreme case where there's no kiyum, there's no implementation of Kashrus Zalman? What do we do with these Eidim? Do we let them off scot-free? And what's the answer? We give mamas. Why do they get mamas? Two possibilities that we discussed at great length last time. Excellent. Max says, Lo tanev riachet shaker. But I have a problem. Why do I have a problem with Lo tanev riachet shaker? It's a lafshembo masa. You don't get malchus for lafshembo masa. That's one possibility. So we have to answer that question. The second possibility is to say that in this particular case, namely, in this extreme situation where we cannot implement Kashrus Zalman literally, the Torah says there's a different punishment of Kashrus Zalman. The Kashrus Zalman now that applies is what? Malchus. Malchus becomes a substitute for Kashrus Zalman. Now, where do I see these two roads that diverge in the yellow wood? Where do I see one approach that says the Malchus is for Losada? And where do I see a different approach that the Malchus is for Kashrus Zalman? And the answer is, basically, I see it in the Rambam versus the Ramban. The Rambam and the Ramban are going to have a machlokas about whether or not Losana, Breyacha, Eid Shaker, the false testimony, could incur a chiyuv malchus in a case. Now, this is the case that they argue about, Ben Chalutza. What's unique about Ben Chalutza? And offhand, it doesn't even belong in our Mishnah. It's only a psul drabanan. No, if it's only a psul drabanan, then what does it mean, Kashrus Zalman? If the Malchus is for Kashrus Zalman, in other words, if I cannot implement Kashrus Zalman literally, in this case, I can't make the Eidim into Chalolim, so my substitute approach is Malchus, but where's the Kashrus Zalman here? From the Torah's perspective, there is no Kashrus Zalman. Kashrus Zalman is an empty set. Do you follow me, Sam?
Yeah.
Why is it an empty set? The Torah doesn't recognize the psul of Ben Chalolim. It doesn't exist. So again, on a Doraisa level, it doesn't exist. And therefore, where's the Kashrus Zalman? What did they intend to do as I analyze their Eidus? I take their Eidus, put it under a magnifying glass, a microscope, and what do I end up with? Nothing. It's an empty set. And therefore, if Malchus is to be viewed as a kiyum of Kashrus Zalman, it doesn't apply in this case of Ben Chalutza. Says the Rabban, erase Ben Chalutza. It doesn't belong in the Mishnah. Agav urche nokteta. There are certain phrases that get schlepped along, but they don't really belong there. Says the Rambam, even in the case of Ben Chalutza, the Eidim will get Malchus. Why? What generates the Malchus in the case of Ben Chalutza, according to the Rambam? The violation of Losana. Because Losana applies whenever the Eidim perjure themselves. When they try to incriminate or disqualify someone. Losana breyacha et shaker. And it doesn't matter one iota, makes no difference whatsoever whether the psul, in this case it's doraisa like in Megdusha, or it's a psul derabanan of Ben Chalutza, either way, whichever way you cut it, it's a violation of Losana.
This is
Eid Shaker. Eid Shaker, you testified falsely, we established that. Now you're going to get Malchus for Losana. But we have Max's question. What about a Lav Shembo? Masa. So that's the sugya that we mentioned last time on the Beis Amid Beis. Remez, Liedim Zomimim, Shalokim, and Atorim, Menayim, Vitzdikos, Atzadik, Vishios, Arosha, Vim Ben Hakos, Arosha. So we have a pasuk that tells me that despite the universal rule that you don't get Malchus for a Lav Shembo, Masa, the exception to the rule is the violation of Losana. And that's the Rambam Shem. The Rambam Sheet is going to have a tremendous impact on the case of two Eidim that testified against Reuven that his ox killed a human being. Because in such a case, the Torah says that Reuven, as the owner of the ox, is personally responsible for the death of the victim who was killed by this ox. And his responsibility has to be paid up with what's called kofar. Kofar, the Gemara says, is a kapara. Kofar is a chiyuv bidei shamayim. And therefore,
according to the Ramban, one could argue that there's no kasher zomam over here. There's no room for Malkus insofar as Malkus, according to the Ramban Shita, his approach to the Malkus Akim of kasher zomam. Because what's the kasher zomam? What punishment did I impose upon you by testifying against you that your shor killed a person? A kapara? That's between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Again, there's a whole side issue here about whether or not Beis Din is kofin on a kapara. But let's assume, according to that mind, the omen that says Beis Din has no right, no authority to compel a person to pay up a kapara. Kapara is a schus. It's a merit that you have. You want to take advantage of it, you'll be well we would recommend doing so. You don't want to take advantage of it, that's your headache. But we can't impose it upon you. There's no kasher zomam yet. There's no incrimination or imposition of a punishment from the judiciary perspective. And the Ramban says in this case there's no malchus whatsoever. And guess what? The Rambam says you get malchus. And you guessed it. Because the Rambam holds you get malchus for losana. And in the case of shoro harages hanefesh, there's no less of a violation of losana than any other case. And therefore there will be malchus. What we tried to suggest last time is that this whole discussion could be placed within the framework of the two answers of Tosis. And this is a great review for what we've done up until now. Tosis raises the question, since we cannot fulfill Kasher Zomam, in the case of Egrush Mechalutz, for example, then the Eidus itself becomes Eidus She'i Ata Yochol Azimah. The Gemara in Sanhedrin Be'Malf establishes that any Eidus that doesn't lend itself to Azomam, it's not subject to Azomam, call a system of checks and balances if you're into American constitutional law, right? Checks and balances. If it doesn't lend itself to Azom, it's not an Eidus at all. Therefore, the Gemara establishes that if the Eidim can't answer the questions, which are called Chakiris, of Makom and Zman, then we throw out the Eidus. The Gufa Shaleidus is completely incomplete. It's deficient. It has to be left out. There's no possibility of what? Of Hazoma. Here too, says Tosis, there's no possibility of Hazoma. Because Hazoma means that we have to hang over the heads and albatross around the necks a certain punishment. There's no punishment here because we're not fulfilling Kash Hazoma. So Tosis offers two answers. Who remembers the first answer, Tosis? I'm drilling you. Ah, you have to look inside. No good. All right. The first answer, Tosis. No. Tosis says that Malkus itself is Kasher Zomam. When we can apply Kasher Zomam literally and do to the Eidim as they, with what I call the boomerang theory, as they want to do to the Nidon, fine. If we can't do so, then there's a drawback position, a fallback position. Namely what? Malkus. Malkus is now a substitute for Kasher Zomam. That's the first answer, Tosis. The second answer to Tosis says no. Malkus is a separate punishment. It's not related to Kasher Zomam. There is no Kasher Zomam. No, well, what about the fact that the Eidus is Eidus Shiat Yochol Aziva? Says Tosis in the second answer, whenever there's no Kiyum of Kasher Zomam, when the Torah precludes the possibility of implementing Kasher Zomam, then there's no requirement of Eidus Shiat Yochol Aziva. Eidus Shiat Yochol Aziva only applies when the Torah gives Azom. But if there's a category of Eidus, and the nature of that Eidus is such that it doesn't generate, doesn't engender Kasher Zomam, then it doesn't require Kasher Zomam. Then such an Eidus could exist on its own 2 feet without lending itself to Azom, because there is no Azom. Comes along though to be Yehudin, he says, what happens if we interrogate two Eidim who testify against the Kohen that he's a Ben Grusha? And they answered, yeah, we know exactly what time it was. Where did it happen? Where did you see the get? Was it on the rooftop? Was it in the basement? Where is it? We can't remember. Says no to Yehuda. This situation, whether the Eidim are accepted or not, would depend upon the two Teirutz of Mitosis. If you accept the first Teirutz of Mitosis, every Eidus under the sun, without exception, requires Ati Yochol Azima. And therefore the Ati Yochol Azima here is through what? Through the possibility of Malkus. But wait a second, the Eidim said, Eini Yodea, we don't know the answers to Makom and Zman. What happens to the Eidus then? It doesn't lend itself to Hazov, it doesn't lend itself to Hazov, it goes over. But according to the second Teretz of Tosis, when there's no Kiyum of Kasher Zomam, literally we cannot apply the Ben Grusha Mechalutza onto the Kohanim. In such a case, the Eidus doesn't lend itself to Hazom, but it doesn't need Hazoma. It's completely out of the parish of Hazoma. If it's out of the parish of Hazoma, then we don't need Eidus Shatiyachol Azima. It says, no, Viuda. According to the second day in Tosis, if they answer Eini Yodea to one of the Chakiris or Drishas, the Eidus is fine, it's acceptable. And this leads us to Reb Kiveger. Reb Kiveger wants to know, What happens to the case of Eidus HaChodesh?
Two Eidim testify we saw the new moon. Now it was Hazoma, you want to Eisa. Well, we can't make the Eidim into a new moon. So what are you going to do with these Eidim? So if I go with the first Teretz and Tosfos, that whenever there's a Hazoma process of Imanu Ayisa, we have a substitute for Kashya Zomam, but it's also the expanded definition of Kashya Zomam, namely what? Malchus, so we'll give Malchus. But if I go with the second Teretz and Tosfos, namely, that I don't need Hazoma in this case, so Rav Kibbeke says, then you do not give the Eidim Malchus. And here, Alan, I want to pick up the point that we discussed before. Rabbi Kveg has an unbelievable chiddush. He says that our whole discussion about the three categories of Eidios that we mentioned at the beginning doesn't apply to the case of Kiddush HaKodesh. Kiddush HaKodesh will call it a fourth category. It's a category unto its own. What's common to all three categories that we discussed, whether it's Ploni Harges Almoni, whether it's Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, whether it's Bas Conscious Inside, all those cases, we have an Eidus that's incriminating someone, that's disqualifying someone. It comes under the parsha of Sisem Lo Kasha Zomam Lasos Li Achiv. The Achiv is the Nidon, and the Eidim are trying to impose on the Nidon something or other. Whatever it is, Achiv Ritzicha, Achiv of Ben Gushim HaKulutz disqualified. In this case of Kiddush HaKodesh, who's on trial? Who's the Nidon? Lassos Liachim, where's the Achiv? There is no Achiv. And therefore, says Rabbi Kibbeke, there would be no Malchus in this case. And what Alan pointed out to me earlier is that if you look at the Pasuk, Losana Breacha Hitchoker, you could say the same exact approach on the word Reacha. What's the difference between Vasisa Lachicha or Reacha? It's the same idea. In which case, Rabbi Kibbeke has a new category of Eidus, where everybody would agree that you can answer nothing, I don't know, to questions of Mokom and Zman. It's very odd, isn't it? Paradoxical.
Kiddush HaKodesh, don't you need to know exactly where they saw the moon?
Oh, so here you're expressing the view of the Beis HaLevi. You remember Rabbi Yoshua Ben Brisker? He says that I don't accept the Nod of Yehuda, because he says the very essence of Eidus is to make them vulnerable and subject
is the Chakiras.
To the Chakiras, to Kasha Zoma. Again, not Kasha Zoma. That's not really so. He says there's another part of Hazoma, and that is Vihine Eid Sheker Ha'Eid. Meaning that Hazoma works on two different levels. Once, because from one level, one dimension, the Eidim themselves are on trial. And they will be punished if proven through Hazom Imanu Yisef that they lied in their testimony. But there's another part of Hazom. That too is written in the parasha, says the Beis HaLevi. Vihine Eid Sheker Ha'Eid. Simply by testifying against the first pair of Eidim, Imanu Yisef, we disqualify that Eidus, and we establish that the Eidim are Shakron and that they perjure themselves. Punishment or no punishment. Reacha or Vyasisa Kashazom Lasliachim or not.
They become
possible Eidus
to the future is another punishment.
Exactly. No. Oh, that's what I want to tell you.
Now I have an implication.
That the disqualification of the first pair of Eidus is in punishment, Rabosai.
Right.
Is it? Yes or no? Or maybe so?
I want to say yes, because then you made them Shakran, they're possible Eidus.
Is that a punishment?
It's a result.
It's a result. I would say, like Shmuel said, it's a
natural.
Well, we have a bunch of shmuels here, so I shouldn't just say shmuel, the tall shmuel, the wider shmuel. Okay, so the truth is that I think shmuels aren't just right. The halacha of psul eidus for perjuring yourself is not a punishment. Not everyone gets an inalienable right to testify and have his testimony accepted in a Jewish court. Not every single Jew is awarded with that special kartis chaver, you know, I'm a member of the Eidim Club. You have to be worthy of membership. And if you perjured yourself in a court of law, we proved you falsely, then we can no longer accept your testimony. Again, there's a whole process in the Rambam of his tshuva, how he goes tshuva and reads and establishes himself as an aid. But Rabosai, if this be the case, let's take Rabbi Kibbeke's approach together with the Beis HaLevi. Let's combine the two together. Rabbi Kibbeke says that in the case of Eidus Kiddush HaKodesh, there's no requirement of Hazom at all. Says
Rabbi Yosha Ben Brisker, but you have to have answers to the questions of Makom and Zman. There's got to be some Pasuk HaZoma at least to establish Behine Ein Sheker Ha'im. So then it comes out according to the Beis Halevi that the two Eidim were testifying on the Chodesh would at least have to answer the questions of Chakiris, Makom and Zman. And not only that, if there's HaZoma, we'll accept through HaZoma a disqualification of their Eidim and of their status as Eidim from now on. Because how could you rely on these Eidim?
That person from now on, well, I'm afraid as well.
Well, that's Machlokas Abaye V'Rova. And interesting you mention this because Abaye says, in Perek HaChov L'Babaka, Abaye says that Eid Zomim L'Mafreyahu Nifsa. According to the Beis Halevi, it's beautiful. Abaye really, I would like to make a marriage here between Abaye and the Beis Halevi. They're both saying the same thing.
But it also has a big implication because let's say those second set of Eidim don't come for 3 months after that.
Right. Like, so Rava is worried about all the Eidim in the middle.
Right,
I mean, for the last 3 months they've been signing on Shtaris. I mean, this could be an upheaval, a revolution. Could you imagine if today the Batei Dinim here in Yerushalayim are backlogged? Imagine what's going to be after Hazoma. It's going to be crazy. Says Abaye l'mafreyahu nifsal, but you have to say it. I know it's going to be crazy. It's going to wreak havoc in the whole system. People will be waiting online screaming. You know, in this country, people like to raise their voices. It's not like in England. I was on a train in England from Manchester to London. And the train got stuck. And for 45 minutes, everyone on the train is reading their newspaper. Gee, in this country, they'd be ripping the place apart. But in any event, it's going to be bedlam because Abaye holds the Mafreya Hunifsal. Of course, Rava disagrees. But who do we pass the like? Abaye, because the Yal Kagam, the Ayin of Yal Kagam, is Eidim Zomim. And Abaye is right. Why is Abaye right according to the Beis Halevi? What's the whole purpose of Hazoma? What's essential to the Parsha of Hazoma? And it applies in every single category of Eidim straight across the board, even in Eidim HaKodesh. It's got to be subject to the Hine Eid Sheker Ha'Eid. You've established that the Eid perjured himself? Well, at what point in time did he perjure himself? Not today, but yesterday when he testified. In fact, according to Rava, that Rava says, Mikanu lahavo nifsal. I wonder how that operates. On the one hand, we're saying that the Eid didn't perjure themselves. On the other hand, we're saying that they're kosher Eidus until the moment of Azoma. And Rabosa, I said a shiur here yesterday in honor of Shavasa the Thomas. I'm not going to go over the whole shiur, but I do want to share with you one point because I think it'll help us understand the Eidim Zomim, at least according to Rav. Again, this is going to be a wild heckish. I could see my Rebbe hit me over the head for this, you know. He wouldn't like this, but listen to what I want to say. Yesterday we discussed what's called Isurei Aveis. The Rambam in Perikei Milchus Avel has a list of 11 things that an Avel is not allowed to do. He's enjoined from many different pu'ulot, from actions. Now, these Isurei Avel, on the face of it, should apply whenever the activity is antithetical to Avelus. If it's an act of Simcha, for example, the Nisuin, one of the 11 categories of prohibitions is to marry a woman. We can understand very well why marriage is antithetical to Avelus, because the Gemara says, Ein Nisuin Ein Chupa V'lo Simcha, with all the Mishteh and the Suda and the whole nine yards. That's antithetical to Avelus. And we could go on and on through the list. Then we have something called Avelus Yishon. What's Avelus Yishon? Old Avelus. Anybody know what that is? For the Churban. And there, we find certain kulos, certain leniencies that don't apply to Avelus Chadosh Rachman Otsan for London Design Kroban. For example, the Rambam establishes, according to one opinion, in Shulchan Aruch it's brought down, that an Avel who lost one of his seven relatives is enjoined from Erusin. Erusin is not a Maisa Simcha. Only Nesu'in is Simcha. Or, for example, the Rambam establishes in Hilchas Avil that an Avil who lost one of his close relatives is enjoined from learning Torah. Which Torah? Unqualified. The Rambam's got the whole list. Then you look at Hilchos Tainis, when he talks about Tisha B'Av, which is Avelus Yishono. The Rambam says there's certain parts of Torah he's not allowed to learn, other parts of Torah he's allowed to learn. Or for example, Tefillin. The Rambam Paskin said an Avel on the first day of his Avelus is enjoined from wearing Tefillin. Not so in the case of Avelus Yishono. Okay, we have a minig of delaying the Tefillin, if you know what I'm talking about, till the afternoon. But Tisha B'Av is not a day that excludes Tefillin. What I want to suggest is the following, and this was the gist of yesterday's discussion, that with regard to Avelus for one of the Zion Krovim, there's such a thing, I'm going to use a brisker terminology here, as a Gavra Shem Ovel. What's a Gavra Shem Ovel? It's a status. Not every status in Halach is a good status. A status could be a good status, could be the opposite. In this case, there's a Halachic status called an Ovel. And insofar as the Gavra is an Ovel, he's enjoined an entire list of Isurei Ovel, some of which are Isurim on their own, independent of their relationship to Simcha, and undermining the Kiyum Shebelev, the inner experience of Avelus. With regard to Avelus Yishana, however, there's no such thing as a Gavra Shem Ovel. We're all Avel. Well, none of us are Avel, whichever way you want to say it. What did the law prohibit? A Maisus. Any act which inherently has an element of rejoicement, of onek, and it's antithetical to Avelus, it precludes or derails us from focusing on the loss of the Beis Hamikdash, etc., is prohibited. Tefillin is not an act of sin. Erusin is not an act of sin. And to read certain parts of the Torah, like Eov, and Dvar Maharoim Shabiyiria, and Echa, and Kinnis, and so forth, that's not an act of simcha. In the case of an Avel, for the seven Krovim, there's something called a status change. The very moment that the dead is interred, the Avel, the relatives, of any of the seven close relatives, become Avel. And there's a certain system, a whole Marechet, as we call it, of Isurim that apply to an Avel, insofar as it's an Avel. Let's jump back to Eidim Zomim. According to Rava says Eid Zomim Mikan Ulahaba Mivsi. What sense can you make out of it? He says Eid Lucha Boel Michidush Avelus. We don't know whether to believe the first pair of Eidim, the second pair of Eidim. It's Trey and Trey. It's a stalemate. Torah says believe the second pair of Eidim. What concept, if you follow my parallel from Avelus, can we use here with regard to Eidim Zomim to explain Rava's Shifa? That a zomen mikanu lahavu the gavra gets a shame a zomen. It's not a punishment in the classical sense for the crime. It's not even a disqualification of the edim for the crime that they perjured themselves for perjury. No. It's a din of gavra shame a zomen. Just like in Avelus, there's certain prohibitions that apply to an ovel. Insofar as he's an ovel, that's his status. Even if those Isurim have nothing to do with Simcha, they're pu'ulot that are prohibited to an Avel, so too with regard to Eid Zomim. The very moment that the Eid becomes an Eid Zomim, at that moment, Dinim kick in, Psul Eidus, and a punishment of Kasher Zoma. And sometimes you have to substitute Malkus.
So that's what Shmuel said earlier, that's a Tutsa'ah, and that's what a punishment.
Incorrect. It's a totsa'ah of the shame eid zomen. Says Rava, at what point in time does the shame eid zomen emerge? Only from the time that the eidim shniim, the eidim hamazivim, testify one way. At that moment, the eidim are declared to be eidim zomen. Is mikan lahavim. Yeah, it's not gonna work with Losana. You know, if you're assuming that the Malkus is for Losana, then the Losana took place then.
It's like even on Losana, without Malkus. So the soul should be my friend because of, you know, Losana.
So that's what I'm saying, Daniel. If you're gonna take the approach that the Malkus is for Losana, it's very problematic. Then we're going to have to go with Rava's second explanation that it was a separate Xeris Chachom Yishun Lekucha. But if you're going with Kasher Zoma, if the Malkus in our Mishnah, the way the Ramban says it, only Ben Grusha and not Edi Kofer, is for what? For Kasher Zoma, then forget about Losana. Losana is a Lav Shein Bo Maisa. It cannot incur malchus. So any punishment that you want to impose on the Avim is all part and parcel of what framework? Of what package? Of the Kasher Zomer package. That Kasher Zomer package is meted out from the moment there's a Gavra Shem Eid Zomer. And that's only from the time that the second pair of Eidim testified in Manu Eis.
Really? I don't understand. Even if you're going to have a Chelut Shem, an Eidim, why is it necessary later if it's going to be an Afreya or if it's going to be from
there? What I'm suggesting, Shmuel, is that you could only call, that you can only consider the logic and make sense that the Eidim are punished Mikano Lahava or Nifsal Mikano Lahava and not Lamafreya if you operate with the Shem Eid Zomer. Again, it could be that Abai says that in potential, again, it's a little difficult, a stretch, that even from the moment they testified the first pair of eight, even before Hazom took place, there was a Gavra Shem Eid Zomer in potential, inherently, lurking in the shadows. But the more, I think, simple way of understanding it, without being complicated, would be the way Rav understands it. That even though the testimony of the Haggadah Seis took place yesterday, but the Shem Eid Zomer was established on the Gavra today, after the Hazomah process. That's called Mikan Ulah. Okay, Rabbi, let's get back into the question of Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. Why is it that there's no kium of Kasher Zomer literal to make the Eidim into a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza? Let's operate with Rashi Shita that the Eidim themselves are Kohen. So the Gemara says, V'asisem lo, lo v'lo l'zak. Then the Gemara says, okay, lifsalei lividei, but lo lifsalei zari. Right, you can't punish the children. So let's limit the punishment to the Eidim themselves. Let the children of the Eidim off the hook. So the Gemara says, be'in on kasher zomam v'leka. That's not fair, because they tried to possibly nidon and his children. How could you therefore apply kasher zomam only in a part way? There's no partial kasher zomam. It's an all or nothing procedure. Comes along the Afikiyah, and he asks the Gevaldik Akash. Let's imagine in the mind's eye that the Nidon, who's being accused by the first pair of Nidon Zomim of being a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, has a bunch of kids. Let's say he has 10 sons. What would be if two Eidim testify against 10 people that all of them are Pasul Lakuna, each and every one of them is a Ben Grusha? If we assume that Ben Grusha, like any other punishment, lends itself to Kasher Zomam, right, because we can't stack the cards, we don't know the... So then, would it be sufficient that we impose on the Eidim one single psul of Kasher Zomam? Are you with me? In other words, the Eidim in the first round could have testified against any number of people, and they would get the punishment that's common to all these people. So what difference does it make if the Nidon and his children become Chalol? So I'll grant you that the Eidim Zomim, tried to make all of this group, father and children and everybody, they all become Chalol. Fine. So what? Let's be Mekayim, Kasher Zomam in the Eidim. And that itself should be enough. One punishment can serve for a multiple repercussion aidus, if you follow my point. Says the Afikiyam. Oh, no. If there are many different people, each of which is the victim and the subject of the Eidim Zomim's testimony, then you're right. But here, they're testifying only against one person. But Memela, by imposing upon that person a psul of Kasher Zomam of Ben Grusha, that psul is carried over to their children. So let's define the psul, says the Afikiyah. The psul of Ben Grusha is such that it passes on to the children through the generations. In order to fulfill Kasher Zomam, that same identical psul has to be imposed on who? On the Eidim Zomim. But the Torah says, lo, v'lo l'zak. So far, so good. Let's read it inside, because I want you to see the language of the Afikiyah.
If it was an Eidim Zomim,
Anyone else need a copy?
Yes.
Yet I think there are two.
It was not the same kind of fight, though, because you could still be asked if you ask $1,000 as opposed to 10 times $1,000, you could make him pay much more.
Yeah, in money, you're right. Right. Yeah. We're talking about corporeal punishment or absurd.
Can you tell us that? Okay, yeah, get
it. Yeah, okay. Let's read it in song. Let's read it in song. The Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, lo v'lo l'zar. We cannot impose on the Edom a punishment that's going to be passed on to their children. And since chalos is passed on to their children, we cannot apply kashrus on. So the Afikiyam says, I don't understand. Take a look at the top of the left column. He says, ilu hayadin shemakayimim b'hem onish hazomah. If we could fulfill the kashrus zomah by making the Edom into a ben grushim and chalutza, Hayu ha'edim nasin chalolim vayedai vazeh would be sufficient. L'kayim kasher zoma neged kol kol echad v'echad miosam anoshim shirotzu l'poslam. In other words, what they wanted to do to the nidon is to passel him and his children. So that's like a case of edim who wanted to impose a punishment and incriminate a number of people. All we have to do is be mekayim with the edim one such punishment. And that would cover all the many, many people that they tried to pass on. Oh. Says the Afikiyam, no. You're wrong. Your logic is fallacious. Why? El Shasham, in that case, Zomu l'shte asios nifrados. They had intention against two different punishments. And therefore, we'll punish them with each one of those punishments, but all they have to do is be punished once. Aval Khan, this is the punchline I underlined. Zomu ha'edim rak achas. There was only one asir. They wanted to impose a psul upon whom?
Yeah.
On the father, correct. Umitoch psulo. There's something inherent in the nature of that psul. Mistaev. It expands. Shegam zaro psul. And it impacts on the children. Nimtza. If we analyze the kind of psul that they tried to impose on the nidon, and now by boomerang 3-1, Shebo lifso b'psul chamur. They wanted to impose such a psul to disqualify not only the father, but his children come afterwards. Hamis Pashi Gamal Zara. So therefore, by virtue of the fairness of Kasher Zomah, we'd have to impose that identical psul onto the Eidim. Now in doing so, what would it entail? That the children of the Eidim would become psul. And here the Torah says, lo, v'lo l'zara. It's impossible to have any impact on the children of the Eidim. They're guiltless, so to speak. The efshal kain for a onesh be osam midosh is zomam lifsol esbach. Okay, so that's what I call hakofa alf, but he doesn't end here. Now we're ready for hakofa bims. And I think Rabbi Sachnowitz, this was the question that you were asking at last Wednesday night. I think. Let's see. He says achen lefi zeh. Lo yuvan, I don't understand. Ech nismait mikrod vasisim lo she'ein zaro nifsa v'lo psul azer mistaif mipsulo shelo for reza b'chval vasisim lo. Wait a minute. Says the Afikiyam, a brilliant chap. We're not postuling the children. We're not imposing a punishment on the children. The punishment is purely 100% unadulterated, imposed on the father, the aid. But as a result, once you make him a Ben Grusha apostle, his children will become apostles. But that's not something we're doing to the children. We are fulfilling V'asis and Lo literally as it should be fulfilled. We are making the aid into exactly what he wanted to make the need on. So you tell me Lo below Lazaro? Yeah. If we would apostle all his children in a separate punishment, a separate asiyah, that would be in violation of lov v'lo l'zara. But if we impose upon the aid a psul, which naturally, as a result of the outcome of being posel, the children become posel, that's not a violation of lov v'lo l'zara. I have only one question on the Afikiyam's question. What would be if the aid already has a son? You see, if you talk about future sons that will be born down the line, I understand that's a natural consequence. But if the aid already has children, that would be in violation of lov v'lo l'zara.
So I don't know. I think, again, I don't want to read too much into the Afikiyah, that what he is suggesting is that we will only passel the father and the subsequent children that are born there. Well, let's look at his answer. Okay, let's look at his answer. He says the following. The Hizbir. Now he's going to explain what is the Gemara's point here about lo v'lo lezar. She'ein cholol posel zaro elish mishi yitziroso ba'aviru. We'll come back to this in just one moment. V'nimso. She efsho lifsol zera ha'edim kechelek mipsua shala'ah. Whoa, this is fascinating. The Afikiyam has a major revolutionary breakthrough. It says that you can affect the children if you impose upon the father a psul chalolos, assuming that psul chalolos is b'yitziras. I would substitute a slightly different word, I think it's the same idea. B'tol dasa. Meaning, if he was born a chalol, it's in his genes, then he passes it on to the next generation. But the Eidim don't lend themselves to a psul yitzira. There's no hereditary psul in the Eidim. The Eidim are Kohenim, that they trace themselves back to Pinchas. Whoa, even to Aaron are Kohenim, right? Ella what? What we could do is, we could passel every single child thereafter in order to fulfill Kasher Zoma. In other words, we have two possibilities here, and both of them are impossible. Two possibilities, both of them have to be excluded. One possibility is to say, well, let's impose upon the Eidim the identical psul that they wanted imposed on the Nidah, which would mean a psul that's mistaif to the Zera. That's going to be impossible, because the only psul that's carried on to the Zera is what kind of psul? Be it Sirosa. It's got to be hereditary. The Eidim are not hereditary natural born
Chalol,
right? I don't know if you're familiar with these two phrases in Yiddish. I know how many of you know Yiddish. There's Gebarna and Gevarna. There's a psul that's mistaif if you're a Gebarna, if you're born into it. Right, they used to say about Lubavitch in Lubavitch, there's Gebarna Chassidim and there's Gevarna Chassidim, right? So these Eidim are Gevarna, they became Chalol. That Chalol is not passing. But the Torah says Kasher Zoma. We got to do to the Eidim what they did intended to do to the Nidah. So we have to somehow affect their children as well. No, then you're going to have a separate Maisa Psul to passel their children. On that, the Torah says lo v'lo lezar. So let's just go over the logic of the Afikiyam. If you were to impose on the Eidim the identical Psul that they tried to give the Nidah, a Psul which is Mistaif Lazaro, that would be a perfect fit, and then we would apply the principle of Kasher Zoma literally in the case of Ben Gushim and Chalitz. Why? Because we're not doing anything to the Zera. There's no violation of Lov Lo Zara. All we're doing is imposing a psul on the father, the aid. The Mela, the children become psul, and that's okay. Says the Afikiyam, no, you misunderstood. There is no way under the sun that you can impose upon the aided a psul that will be transferred and bequeathed hereditarily to their children. The only way you can fulfill Kasher Zoma would be to passel every one of the children, one by one by one, as a separate asiya. That you can't do, because that's a violation of love laws.
The progeny that comes out after will be halal. That's what we're saying, according to the Afikiyam, like any of the Kaporna, yeah, so they'll actually be halalim. According to the
Afikiyam. Who are we talking about? The Nidon or the Eidim?
The Eidim.
So again, in the Havamina, we were suggesting, why don't we impose upon the Eidim exactly the same psul that they imposed on the Nidon? In which case, that any future children will inherit the psul of their father. That was the cash of the... So what's wrong with that? Why do you object to that? That would be a perfect fit and a kiyum of Kasher Zoma. We're not doing anything to the children. We're doing only to the father. So we're not violating the principle of lov lo lezar. We're not touching the children. The children will be possible in the Mela as an actual outcome. Teretz is, says the Afikiyam, that's his revolution in his Teretz. there's no way that you can impose a psul on the Eidim that would be passed on to their children. Because there's no heredity. There's no Yishilos.
The children who are born after will not become Chalalim.
Correct. They can't become Chalalim unless we do what? We make them into Chalalim. To make them into Chalalim would be in violation, would be upsetting the rule of Lobul. If the psul chalos in the children is a natural effect, it happens by the way, that's okay. So and that was the cash of the afikiyah.
But isn't that what's happening when we change?
No, it can't happen because we can't make him into a chol b'yitzira. That we can't do. To pass on the psul chalos to his children. That we can't do. No magic will allow us to do that.
But the Yetzira, those children that come afterwards, would be halal.
But how do they become halal? What makes them into halal? No! Then you missed the point of the Afikiyah.
He's got a Shinui status now, he's a halal.
No, but he's a different kind of halal. There are two types of halal. There's natural born halalim who have something that you can see, so to speak, in the microscope. You know, we'll ask Rav Nachman Kahana about this. He'll probably agree with me, literally, that we could probably take a stem cell sample and put it under an electric scanning microscope, and I will tell you that this comment is apostle.
Except the mother.
What?
She becomes a halal. Now
what is she? She's the Bas Yisrael?
She's a Bas Yisrael.
Right. Right, she's a Bas Yisrael.
Now that we made him a halal, now that he has relations with her, and she becomes a halal, so now you're fine. He could be a Yehuz, the best Yehuz. She's a halal, so Mimele, all the kids are going to become.
So you're asking, how does she become a halal? Is that what you're asking?
I don't think that maybe, instead of making.
But that's only if she marries a Kohen, you know.
Yeah, I think
I don't know what Miri you're referring to. 1 second. Yeah.
Instead of making each individual kid a halal, they make the mother a halal. Once she becomes a halal, all the kids are going to become halal.
Whose mother? The Aiden's mother?
The Aiden's wife.
I don't know whose mother you're talking about.
The Aiden's wife.
The Aiden's wife.
Oh, the Aiden's wife. You want to make the Aiden's wife into a halal? Yeah, so let's just see how that would play itself out. The Aiden's wife, and therefore what? The psul.
Any children who have subsequent, they should be a halala. So in Ashtam, you got the best Yehuz, but in Ashtam, he's married to someone that's usher to him.
So you're raising a whole slew of questions here, which I don't know if we're ready for. What happens to the Eishes Ha'ed as far as Lo V'lo L'Zara? But again, if we focus just on Lo V'lo L'Zara for the time being, does everybody see the vacillation here between the Havmid and the Maskar of the Afikiyah? There are two ways of understanding how we could have made the children of the Eidim into Chalol. One way is by saying, let's impose upon the Eid a full-fledged, 100 yards, soul of Chalol that's transferred over to the children. And that would be okay as far as Lo V'lo L'Zara. Okay. And the second way of understanding is that no, we cannot impose upon the Eidim a psul that's transferred, that's bequeathed hereditarily. But what we could do is we can make each one of the children, single file, one by one, declare them as halalim. The first way has to be excluded because it only applies to a gebarna, to a yitzirasa. If there's something in his yitzira that's a halal, it's in his genes, that could be passed on. Not in the case of the Eidim. The Eidim have nothing genetically that makes them to Chalol. But what you could do, Rabbi, and then the floor is yours, is you could make the children to Chalol. That's a violation of law.
Why can't the Mishnah Ben Grusha is a biological
biological psul?
Chalol, psul.
Right.
What you're doing today is Zomim, is not biological.
Correct.
It's a halachic definition of them as a gafur,
right. And we'll treat them as halal.
Only them.
And that
he doesn't get rishon anymore.
Right.
But it doesn't affect the kids.
Exactly. That's why, says the Afikiyah, the only havamin of kasha zomam was to be to take each one of the children and declare them through the parish of kasha zomam as halalim. And that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? It's morally justifiable. Why? Because what did they want to do?
to the Nida, and they wanted to make not only him into a Chol Diskov, but every one of the children, etc., grandchildren, blah, blah, blah. That's exactly what you're going to do in the Eid. The only problem is what? Hello, hello, Lazaro. That's the secret of this Kibbutz. You don't have it? It's brilliant. I love it. I love it. If you don't love it, it's not good. Because it means that default is why. The default is why. If you don't love this piece of Torah, the fault is why.
Why is the assumption around that he's trying to get the father, the first group of Edom, and also the children? Maybe it's the same thing. He only wants to get the father, and all the children. It's going to be like in his case when Kasha is down to him. So he disqualifies the children.
That's a brilliant question. Oh, yeah, Shmuel's asking a brilliant question. Let's review Shmuel's question just for a minute. Maybe that was your question too. Shmuel is asking, we have to do to him as he wanted to do to them. So what do you say? Maybe he only...
So why are we assuming
he wants the Nadal to become El Chalo, and his children may have become El Chalo.
Not me. No, but Shmuel, wait a minute. The whole chap of the Afiki Yam is that when you say this guy is a Ben Grusha, what you're saying is that he is a Ben Grusha be Yitzira. He was born to a Grusha, and therefore his soul is going to be bequeathed through all the generations.
That's Mimela.
No.
It doesn't matter if that's Mimela, because that defines the soul. You hear the chaf of the Afikiyam. The nature of the soul, he calls it a psul chomer. Did you remember that language? It's a psul chomer that it's so, the guy is so possible, and then his children, grandchildren, the whole generation become possible. That's the only way you can fulfill Kasha Soma. But you can't do that. Says they have to get one. Because, as Rabbi Sachman said very well, the psul you're going to impose upon the Edom is a quasi halacha, a juridic psul. It's not a hereditary mitzias psul, and therefore will not transfer to their children. Good. So let's possible the children. This is a low. Rabbi Sachman, you'll have to, we don't have that much time, so look it over.
What was my
this is your homework. Your brilliant question was that maybe they only intended to passel the father, but even if I grant you that, their intention was to passel him in such a way that he's a Ben Grusha, which means that his children will become soon. I want to talk to you about Mitzri Shem. Okay, that's an interesting sugya. If everyone could kindly open to Tosus at the very bottom of Beis Amid Aleph, and Tosus says the following: Kasha Heicha Shemeidin Shehu Mitzri Shem. Amid Aleph. We're still in Amid Aleph. This is, for those of you who are with me, this is your last chance on Amid Aleph. After this, we're on Amid Beis. Like it or not. By the way, we will be moving at a faster pace, but this is just a gold mine. I mean, I don't even know if we touch the surface. It's just... Okay, so here's Tosus Kash. He says the following: Heicha Shemeidim Shu Mitzri Sheni. Right, the Torah says that only Dor Shlishi, only the third generation of Mitzri, the grandson of the Mitzri, can enter into the Jewish nation through Gerus, and he can become part of Kahal Yisrael. So now they testify against Ploni that he's a Mitzri Sheni. Are they passing his children? They're not passing his children. Here's your case, where they only testify against the father, not against the children, because Mitzri Sheni is a psul that's not passed on to the next generation. Mitzri Shlishi is allowed to come into Kahal Yisrael. So now, if we apply Kasha Zomim literally, we'll make the Edom into a Mitzri Sheni. Will affect their children? Are we in violation of law below Lazar? Absolutely not. Because the Mitzri Sheni doesn't pass his psul on to his children. We now have the last generation of psulim. The Edom testified against Ploni that he's the bottom of the barrel. He's the last of the Mohicans. He will become psul, but nobody after him. So let's fulfill Kasha Zomim. Make the Edom into a Mitzri Sheni. And they can no longer marry a Jewish girl.
That is the point. You exclude the
Kashizomim.
Yeah, 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 yeah. No, I mean, Shane is Jewish. We don't invoke his gerus, just that he can't marry into the Jewish fold. He may be able to marry another Mitzri Sheni who's a ger. You know, you have to. Then you have to know Simon Vav in Shulchan Aruch.
And I can't marry Mitzri Shlishi.
What?
I can't marry Mitzri Shlishi.
No. Oh yeah, anybody can marry Mitzri Shlishi. I think so. I don't see why someone can't marry a Mitzri Shlishi. Unless you know something, I don't know. Right? Don't.
What?
He's a ger. He's a full-fledged ger, but nobody can marry him except for maybe another mitzvah shady. Maybe a ger could marry him, a regular ger, whatever it is.
He's not gerud himself, the mitzvah
shady. Yeah. You know, if he hasn't done gerus, then there's nothing to talk about. He's a guy gog. You know, he's a complete guy. Not only is he a complete guy, he's a mitzvah. That's even worse. You know, it's one thing, bad enough to be a guy, on top of that he's a mitzvah. You know? Which means even after gerus, he can't marry anybody. Any other ger can marry anybody. Well, in the case of the gerus, it's complicated if she can't marry Cohen, but that's a different story. But a ger, for our purposes, a regular ger from the umos, shar umos, except for Mitzri and Amoni and a few others, but they can marry anybody. But this guy, even after gerus, he can't marry anybody.
How is there a chalus of gerus? What's going on?
Again, Rabosai, listen, a Mitzri could be a ger like any other nation of the world. No one's excluded from gerus. Even an Amaleki could become a ger. That's why Ibn Eivon of Shalom on Moim de Torah, Dar in Ibn Eivon. No, Chas Shalom. Lo Yavo Bekal means that after gerus they can't marry him. Otherwise, there's no relevancy. I mean, if you're talking about a guy, anyway. I want to get to the punchline here. So Tosa says, here's a brilliant chat. Okay? Shmuel, you with me? Yes. Here's a brilliant case. We're going to impose upon the Edom exactly the psul that they wanted to impose on the Nidon. And it's not going to affect their children. Because it wouldn't affect the children of the Nidon. So Tosa says, V'yeshlomar mikomakom ishto mifselis. The pasla bibi also uksiv asisim lo kashizomam lo velo liisha. Now watch what goes on here. This is one of those rare occasions where a Rishon introduces a drasha. I mean, our Gemara says lo velo lizaro. Okay, let's expand it, says Tosa. It doesn't bother me to say lo velo liisha. What happens is that this Mitzri Sheni, when he has relations with his wife, she can no longer marry a Kohen. Okay. Rabosai, let's use the last 3 minutes that we have, because I like to finish at 9:30, to understand a chiddush here of Rav Shmuel Rizovsky. How many people in the room have ever heard of Rav Shmuel Rizovsky? Where was he, Rosh Yeshiva? Panovich. He had a very special relationship with my Rebbe, Rav Yosher Ber Soloveitchik. Don't tell this over there in Bnei Brak, they won't believe you, but I can testify. In fact, when Rav Shmuel went to Boston for treatments, when he left Boston on his way back to Eretz Yisrael, he was upset. He was depressed. He says, who am I going to talk to in learning? Here in Boston, I found someone that I can talk to in learning. Anyway, don't publicize that in Bnei Brak, because we'll get into trouble. But that's the truth. Comes along Rav Shmuel. Pure brilliance. Listen carefully. He wants to know the following. Why is it that a Mitzri Shlishi, and it's not a philosophical why, a halachic why, what's the mechanics? Why is it, how is it that a Mitzri Shlishi is allowed to enter into Kahalas? And he says there are two ways of understanding. A real Lamdish Chakim. Possibility number one is to say that a Mitzri Sheni is already a knapper mitzvah. You know, he's already a weaker... He's one step removed. He's a weaker mitzvah. He's so weak that he cannot pass on his psul to his children. So the mitzvah shlishi, because the mitzvah sheni is a secondary psul, doesn't receive that power of psul from his father. Or, another way of understanding it is to say the following. That a Mitzri Shlishi, the Torah allowed into Kal Yisrael. True, the Mitzri Sheni could pass on his psul to the Mitzri Shlishi, but the Torah was matir a Mitzri Shlishi to come into the country. And here, Rav Shmuel says there's an afkamina between the two. I'll just read you the one line that I copied over from Rav Shmuel. He says the following: that if the answer is that the Shlishi is mutter b'kol because he's a shlishi? Yesh lomar. Zeu rak klapi mitzri sheni mamish. You can only be considered a mitzri shlishi and have that status if relative to your father, who's a mitzri sheni, you're a shlishi. Aval im nifsol es ha'edim, they would pick up the din of a mitzri sheni, but yet we cannot call their children a mitzri shlishi. Watch this. Rav Shmuel is brilliant. He says the following. Are you with me on this? This is mamish. Hold on to your seats. He says the following. If we take the mitzri sheni status of the nidon and we superimpose it onto the Aden, then Tosis Kash is a Gevaldinger Kash. Brilliant question. Tosis is right. A Mitzri Sheni cannot pass on his psul to a Mitzri Shlishi. But if the halacha is that a Mitzri Sheni can indeed pass on that psul to a Mitzri Shlishi, but the Torah was mocked and the Torah gave license for a Mitzri Shlishi, says Rav Shmuel, a Mitzri Shlishi could only be such, he could only gain a status if he's the third in a series of generations. But in the case of the Eight Zomim, you cannot say that his children are the third in a series of generations. It's very similar to the Afikiyam, isn't that? Okay, Rav Moshe, we'll stop here. Shkoyach to everyone. And Mirz Hashem will pick it up next Wednesday. I don't know if you got my email, but a lot of what I wrote in the email, spare me of sending it again, because there's a lot on this list that we didn't get to. We'll be focused in Mirz Hashem next week on the Tosis Dibra Maschil Uma Hasokel Eino Niska.
I saw it.